Shri Bhakti Vaibhava Ki Garantaraj Shriman Bhagavatam Ki Giriraj Maharaj Ki Nashringade Bhagavan Ki Jainitai Gopal So what did we discuss last week? Any other points, especially from the last class that we gave?
Srila Prabhupada states that no one is barred from doing devotional service, and the example that you gave was Haridas Thakur coming from the background that he did, still he was considered as a Navacharya.
Many nice points, but nothing from the previous class. Summarizing the chapter, that's nice, but it's a good
thing. Devotional service dissolves the subtle body. Like food in the stomach, whatever we take, is digested.
Mm. I just heard in one of the classes that Pratya Vigraha is actually not a form which is made out of concoction, but is actually made based on the intentions of the scriptures. Do we have any guidelines on the purchase of the deities? I mean, where to buy the deities from and how basically the deities should be accepted, the form is the country used before you install them.
Meaning, where do we get them from?
Yeah.
Then there's different in Vrindavan and also in Navadvip, there is different deity wallets. So then generally we buy them from these places. It's part of their family training to make the deities, and the deities are made according to specific guidelines and so forth. So generally, that's how we do it. Devotees will come from particular places, another group or Vrindavan.
I was just wondering whether the is there any authorization in the whole process, just coming from our, the sampradaya. These are the guidelines we should follow in, buying the deities or accepting, the forms as they come to us. Or we just go to any deity mother and pick up the deity of our choice and that.
Yeah, you can do like that. I mean, generally we act under the auspices of the guru and the senior Vaishnavas. You seek their blessings, but then, they may just, you may just approach them generically and say, can I begin to worship Gaur Nitai? They give blessings, and then you go and find Gaur Nitai. Like that. So devotees will go to the shops, or generally we ask other devotees, where did you get this deity from, or like that. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
So the deity said about Acharyas, we actually read and hear that many of those deities were self-manifest.
Some.
And here we go and buy the deities. There is no difference at all between the potency of the deities.
Yeah, Krishna is Krishna, so when Krishna enters the Archa Vigraha, then it is self-same. Krishna is the same. But Krishna will be... he will manifest according to the devotion of the devotee. So when a very great devotee has worshipped the particular deity, then somehow there is a special connection between that devotee and the Lord. Mm-hmm. So then there's some special feeling which may come. but really from any deity then. Actually, it comes down to the bhakti within us. That's how much we can. Krishna reciprocates with us. And Krishna will, according to his desire, then he will manifest himself maybe especially through certain deities for certain devotees.
Ladies.
One must establish the relationship with his spiritual master and Krishna, that's like someone that can. And he says that even the one who is unintelligent, that the material spiritual master originally be already built within the heart, then one must perform the devotional service sincerely. And the only aim should be Bhagavan realization. He should look at that like an eye of a bird, really one pointed.
I was thinking of the deity, Netai Gaura, installed with their profile. Special potency. About your comments. The relationship between the deity and the devotee. So merciful.
The biggest deity is given to open them. So then the curtains never closed.
Have you seen him? You've been to Govinda?
I just want to ask a question. You know, sometimes when you look at the deities, you kind of think they're smiling or they're angry. Is that speculation or is it just how you feel the emotion or is it really reciprocation?
Yeah, it's reciprocation. You see, Prabhupada says this is the barometer of bhakti. If Krishna is smiling, then you know your service is being accepted. So we know when we come before the deity, sometimes the deity is... I know, like when I take darshan of the deities here, because I've worshipped these deities since I joined the temple. So the Lord Nityananda, he tends to give me the most, like, he tends to give me the hardest time out of all the deities. I look at everyone else and they're smiling, and I look at Lord Nityananda and he's looking at me like very seriously.
He's always angry.
Huh?
He's always angry.
Really?
Nityananda.
To you.
Happy.
Yeah.
But he tend.
Yeah, exactly. Balab always smiles, but watch out for him from his smile. He's heavy.
Yeah, I mean, I find that Lord Nityananda, he's always looking at me and indicating, because he is guru. Yeah. So he's always indicating where I need to improve. The other deities may see the good service that you do and your sincerity and how much you're trying. But then I find with Lord Nityananda, he looks at me and he tends to be judging what am I lacking or what am I holding back or what is my deficiency or what anatta do I have that I need to overcome. Like that. So when the deities look at us in a particular way, sometimes they're happy and sometimes they're otherwise. That's not mental concoction, that is. That's a reciprocation from Krishna.
But isn't he supposed to be the most lenient out of all the deities?
Yeah, but with me, I don't know why. I thought about that many times, but I don't know why. But that's
most merciful, in fact.
So maybe that's his mercy, and he pushes more than the other deities. Like that. It's only my personal experience, but it's true. In general, he's like that. With me, he deals like that.
Actually, coming back to the point about, like Prabhuji said, if Prabhupada installed that deity, so it's more powerful. And if a powerful devotee worships a deity, then it has got higher potency. So it's the person who is worshipping the deity, it's not the deity. So, say for example, if Prabhupada installed that deity, so it's more powerful.
Not more powerful. Every deity is the same because the deity is Krishna. Krishna accepts the form. Krishna is Krishna. So every form is the same. But it seems that we get different reciprocation from different deities. So that would mean that Krishna is reciprocating with the devotee in a particular way according to his desire. A particular form of Krishna, then Krishna is deciding that with this devotee, with this particular form, this particular deity, Archavigraha, I will reciprocate more with this devotee through this form. So different devotees, we have more reciprocation from particular deities. It's not that Krishna is different, it's just that he chooses to reciprocate more through particular deities, that's right. Or our devotion may be more strong with particular deities. We have more attachment to particular deities, although Krishna is the same in every deity. So then Krishna reciprocates more through that particular deity.
Because every now and then we hear that deity is very powerful. So it's that person's desires are more attached with that deity.
Well, we did
because if we hear that thing very
often. Not more powerful, but we have there's something special about the fact that the deity was installed or worshipped by a pure devotee. So the deities here were installed by Prabhupada himself. So therefore there is that specialness of Prabhupada installing these deities.
Sorry, my question was, will that make the deity more powerful?
Yes.
No.
Okay, so it's just the sentiments we can say that, okay, this deity was installed by Prabhupada, so...
No, it means that because Prabhupada installed the deity, then that between Prabhupada and that deity there is a special relationship. Mm. So somehow that deity, you know, we're reminded not only of Krishna, but we're reminded of Prabhupada's relationship with that particular deity. Mm. So in that way, because Prabhupada is in between us and the deity, then that relationship becomes magnified. Or the potency of the deity becomes magnified to us through the fact that Prabhupada personally installed or worshipped that deity. So we see when a pure devotee particularly worships a particular deity, then like that. It's a mystical thing because the deity is Krishna. The Krishna will reciprocate according to his desire with particular devotees. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Then what I learned from that is, say if you go to some teeth, pilgrimage, like say Mayapur or Jagannath, apart from the pastimes attached with that place, so Panchatattva in Mayapur is no different than anywhere else.
No, Mahaprabhu is Mahaprabhu. Gaur-Nitai here is the same as Gaur-Nitai in Mayapur. Same. Like that. But if they reciprocate more with you, then you may feel more reciprocation from particular deities. That's Krishna, that's you, that's the devotee who may have worshipped that deity who is blessing you. There's many facts like that. But the deity is the same. All deities are the same.
Could it be because there are a lot of, like for example, these deities here were installed by Prabhupada. Prabhupada being such a great devotee, I mean like pure soul, he could have prayed to the Lord that please bless all the people who come here, kind of. So that, listening to Prabhupada, he is still showering his mercy because of Prabhupada. Could it be because of that?
Yeah, there would be some, because Prabhupada is involved with the deity in the installation of the deity. He installed the deity, worshipped the deity. Then there is special significance to this particular place and the deity worship which is being carried on. Yeah, but that's different. That's character and mood. But the point is the potency of Krishna or Krishna being manifest in the deity is the same. The mood can be different. Krishna can be in different moods and different deities. So we see in the beginning of this chapter, what was this chapter called? The glories of devotional service. And so Kapila Dev immediately began to instruct Devahuti on the glories of devotional service, because as he's explained in this chapter and as we'll read tonight as we finish the chapter, devotional service is the means and the end to become liberated from the material energy. It is the most effective form of transcendental practice and realization. It is only by bhakti or by devotional service that one can fully realize the absolute truth, meaning that one can realize Bhagavan, one can have complete realization of the absolute truth only by worshipping Krishna through devotional service. So therefore, Kapila Deva is not going to instruct Devahuti on something which is inferior or something which is indirect or something which will take longer, considering that human life is very short. So therefore we need the most direct method, we need the perfect method, we need the ultimate method, how to realize the absolute truth. So how to realize the absolute truth? That is through devotional service. Everything else is considered secondary, not the indirect. Therefore he does not recommend Ashtanga or Jnana or Tapasya or Karma Yoga. He doesn't recommend others, but he says specifically bhakti or devotional service. So Prabhupada points out in the beginning of the chapter very nicely, is an important point. One must live a regulated life in the mode of goodness, because this is how we advance in our Krishna consciousness. Our devotional service needs to become regulated and steady and fixed and in the mode of goodness for us to make advancement. When we're too much in the mode of passion, then it's very hard for us to be regulated in our devotional service. Some days we chant our rounds nicely, other days we chant them very hurriedly. If we're too much in the mode of ignorance, then we chant our rounds very late at night. Quality is not very good, like that. So devotional service needs to be practiced in a regulated way to be effective, which means in the mode of goodness. Then Kapila Dev begins to instruct in the second class we gave in the chapter. He goes into the immediate description of Atma Tattva, or knowledge of the soul and his bondage in the material energy. And he gives an immediate and very succinct and very precise definition of our bondage within the material world, how we are bound in the material world. We are bound in the material world through material desires, which is based upon false ego, which expands the concept of aham mameti. And because of this concept, this is how the conditioned soul becomes bound within this material world, and it becomes overwhelmed by lower qualities such as lust and greed. So he immediately defines what is the binding factor in the material world, how we all become bound in this material world. And then he gives the remedy, a very powerful remedy. And the first description he gives of the remedy is that we must reverse our attachment or substitute our attachment with matter to saintly personalities. And he gives many verses describing the glories of saintly personalities and the necessity of becoming attached to them through Vani and through Vapu, if we want to overcome the bondage to the material energy. We must transfer our attachment. So he describes the benefit of being attached to saintly personalities, sadhus, and then he begins to describe the process of devotional service. And he gives a nice description of the Bhagavat Vidhi Marg and the Pancharatrika Vidhi Marg, which means hearing and chanting. Bhagavat Vidhi Marg means engaging ourselves in hearing and chanting, which was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's method to overcome our attachment to the material energy. And simultaneously, while absorbing ourselves in hearing and chanting about Krishna, we must worship the Archa Vigraha, Pancharatrika Vidhi Marg, which means we must do deity worship. By this complete process of bhakti yoga, under the guidance of sadhus, we can overcome our attachment to the material energy. So this is what he's described so far in the chapter. Now he will conclude the chapter with some glorification of devotional service or bhakti yoga.
Third class. Second class, you said. First class and second class. Third class.
Yeah, the first class was the one where he emphasized the Madhagur. The second class was where he emphasized Atma Tattva. The third class, he emphasized Sadhu Sangha. The fourth class, he emphasized the process of bhakti yoga. Pancharatrika Vidimag and Bhagavat Vidimag. And the final class, which we'll give tonight on this chapter, he glorifies the potency of devotional, what will be the result from practicing devotional service.
Is it
both
of them have to be followed,
Bhagavad Gita
and the
Pancharatra
Vidimag?
Yes.
Simultaneously?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to do both. In the condition stage, you have to do both. Prabhupada has this discussion in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. There is some discussion on this point. But it means, Jiva Goswami also describes this point, that Bhagavat Vidimag, or hearing and chanting about Krishna, is sufficient to purify one and take one back to Godhead. But because one is attached to the material energy, and one needs to transfer one's attachment and purify the senses and the mind so that one can chant, hear and chant more effectively, then one needs to engage in deity worship.
I thought deity worship was meant only for grihasthas. Like, they do deity worship and the others can just do the chanting, no?
No. They can do that, but it's not that they only do that. You see, like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, you know, even the most renounced devotees are engaged in deity worship also. Like that. So it's not only for like that. It's necessary to do deity worship to regulate one to... as Kapila has pointed out in the beginning, or Prabhupada pointed out in the beginning of the chapter, in order to come to the mode of goodness and to live a regulated life, one needs to engage in deity worship to do that. That will help to regulate one and purify the senses like that. So then one's hearing and chanting will become more effective. Because one's hearing and chanting may not be steady or fixed without deity worship, in the sense that some days you'll get up late and you'll be under the modes of material nature. There's no deity worship. See, as soon as you gain your deity worship, you have to uplift your consciousness immediately. So you may get up late, but because you still have to worship the deity, your consciousness is uplifted, and then you can begin to hear and chant more effectively. Whereas sometimes you get up late, but if there's no deity worship there, you may get up late, but then it's very hard for you to overcome the mind and get into your hearing and chanting, because you're very contaminated by the modes of material nature. So we Jiva Goswami says, in the neophyte state we need both in order to purify our consciousness. So that is the overall system which Kapila Dev is mentioning, and this is what Prabhupada has instigated or begun within ISKCON, is that there's a total sadhana based on worship of the deity, based on hearing and chanting. All these things are included. Based on the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where Prabhupada said in a few verses ago that one must engage in the Panchanga Bhakti, the five processes of Bhakti, and then that's like a total devotional experience which will purify the senses. You need to be engaging in all things. Chanting the holy name, hearing the scriptures, associating with advanced devotees, worshipping the deity, living in a holy place. You need all five of them to have like a total devotional experience which will purify the consciousness completely. That's okay. Any other points?
What is a mystic realization?
A mystic? Is Prabhupada mentions tonight in the purport?
No, it's in the last one. It's the Sankhya system of philosophy. It is a combination of devotional service and mystic realization.
Where is it?
37.
Whereabouts?
In 31.
In 31? We did read this. We did go over this previously.
That's the same thing.
Didn't Mahaprabhu, didn't you ask the same question?
I think
Mahaprabhu asked. From memory. Did you ask that question?
What was it?
The question that you asked.
I was just looking 31, I didn't hear you. Sorry.
Yeah, 31. I think you asked the same question that Manaji is asking now about mystic realization and devotional service. Someone asked it, did you ask it?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, so he can give you the answer.
Okay.
Not that, because he already asked that question.
I didn't come last time.
You didn't come last time.
That's fine.
And I can't remember what I said.
Okay.
No, that's not.
The second thing is that it dissolves the subtle body.
Mm.
Now, I thought that by devotional service, the subtle body is there, but it gets purified.
No, it dissolves it, because in the pure state there's no subtle body. Because the subtle body is made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. And when
so
you
when this is purified, I thought the mind becomes purified, intelligence becomes purified, and the false ego becomes the ego. And
yeah,
purified.
So you can say dissolved. In other words, the false conception disappears and the real conception remains.
Okay.
Not that so.
Okay.
Same understanding.
I think you were telling something about that silken cloth, you warm it, it becomes thinner.
Mm.
That was the example you gave about the central one.
Yeah. Okay. So, verse 38. The Lord continued, "My dear mother, devotees who receive such transcendental opulences are never bereft of them. Neither weapons nor the change of time can destroy such opulences. Because the devotees accept me as their friend, their relative, their son, their preceptor, benefactor, and supreme deity, they cannot be deprived of their possessions at any time." So Prabhupada mentions within the purport that because of devotional service, a devotee never loses his spiritual assets. Everything else is lost in the material world. All other assets are lost. We work very hard in order to accumulate so many different types of assets within the material world. And basically, in this day and age, you see that most people are simply engaged in trying to accumulate assets. That's what life has become. And the more assets you accumulate, the more successful you'll seem to be. You have more houses, you have more cars, you have more than you consider to be very successful. But all of these things are shrama ivahi kevalam. They are a useless waste of time, because everything is temporary in this material world. Temporary means that you cannot keep it. In due course of time, everything will be separated from you. Whereas your spiritual assets will never be taken away. They are eternal. Every asset which we have in this material world will be taken away at the time of death. Whereas your spiritual assets will be carried over into the next lifetime. That is Krishna's teaching within the Bhagavad Gita. Even a small amount of devotional service will be carried over into the next lifetime. So therefore, devotional service can never be taken away. And as is pointed out by the Lord in this section, that you will get far more than you can imagine by devotional service. The assets that you will receive are far greater than you can imagine, because Vaikuntha is far more opulent than anything in this material world. Even the most opulent situation in this material world is insignificant compared to the opulences of Vaikuntha. And when you go to Vaikuntha, you inherit the entire kingdom of God, because we are all the sons of Krishna. So everything that belongs to the father belongs to the children. So when we go to the spiritual world, everything belongs to Krishna, and because we are Krishna's children, you can say everything is automatically inherited by us, all of that opulence. But in order to inherit all of the opulence of the spiritual world, one must give up all desire to enjoy it separately from Krishna. That is the qualification for entering the spiritual world. Otherwise, you'll be trapped within this material world. And that's, as Kapila Dev has already pointed out, that is why we're all trapped in this material world. Why are we trapped? Because we are attached to the objects of the material world. And because we're attached to it, then we cannot transcend this material world. We're bound by the attachments, by our desires. So therefore, when one becomes free of all desires in this material world, then one can transcend and one can enter into the spiritual world. And you will receive much greater assets than we can even imagine in the spiritual world. But one must not have a desire to enjoy them separately from Krishna. That is, that kind of consciousness is what holds us out of the spiritual world. Now, the greatest opulence that the devotee possesses is one's relationship with Krishna. Each one of us has an eternal swarup, or an eternal relationship with Krishna. Now, that relationship can never be destroyed. It can never be lost. That is eternal, that relationship. So, that is the greatest asset that the devotee has. And that is what the Bhagavatam teaches us to strive for or to attain, is that lost relationship with Krishna. Once one attains that, there is nothing else to be desired. To relate with Krishna in terms of that eternal relationship which we have with Krishna, which will give full satisfaction to the soul. The only satisfaction that the soul can ever fully have is to be re-situated in his eternal relationship with Krishna. And until we get back into that eternal relationship, we can never be fully satisfied. It's not possible.
I heard in one lecture that Srila Prabhupada said that I curse all my followers, that you all will never be able to enjoy the material world. So does Prabhupada curse on us, whoever follows me?
Prabhupada said? Yeah, there was that pastime with Mahaprabhu in, I think, Chaitanya Bhagavat, where the Brahmana cursed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said, you will never be happy in the material world. And Mahaprabhu became ecstatic to receive that benediction. He said, you will never find material happiness. And Mahaprabhu became ecstatic. He felt very blissful that he'd received such a benediction like that.
That was before he's taking the sannyas.
So that is the situation in the material world. So Mary Prabhupada was extending that benediction to all of us also. And practically it's true. Who of us are happy in the material world? Who of us are happy? Yeah, even we have so much material facility, but still we're not happy. Materialist people. That is Krishna's mercy on us.
I read somewhere one devotee came to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, what's this Mayavad philosophy? I don't understand this. Prabhupada says it's very good qualification.
Okay. Very long purpose. Prabhupada's given a lot of elaboration in this section. Thus the devotee who worships me, the all-pervading Lord of the universe, is unflinching in unflinching devotional service, gives up all aspirations to be promoted to heavenly planets or to become happy in this world with children, wealth, cattle, home, or anything in relationship with the body. I take him to the other side of birth and death. Sacha Prabhu, do you want to read the first paragraph?
Unflinching devotional service, as described in these two verses, means engaging oneself in full Krishna consciousness, or devotional service, accepting the Supreme Lord as all in all. Since the Supreme Lord is all inclusive, if anyone worships him with unflinching faith, he has automatically achieved all other opulences and performed all other duties. The Lord promises herein that he takes his devotees to the other side of the birth and death. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended that one who aspires to go beyond birth and death should have no material possessions. This means that one should not try to be happy in this world or to be promoted to the heavenly world, nor should he try for material wealth, children, houses or cattle.
So any points here?
Did you say Shameva hi Kevalam?
Unflinching devotional service, not just devotional service, but unflinching. So she's
pure devotional service. Yeah. Mm. Any other points?
All our anxiety is in life because of lack of faith. All our anxiety is in life is because of lack of faith.
Lack of faith.
So we get acidity and hypertension.
Lack of faith in
Krishna.
So Prabhupada gives some very wonderful statements in these purport, in these three paragraphs. He says, the Lord promises herein that he takes his devotee to the other side of birth and death. Lord Chaitanya therefore recommended that one who aspires to go beyond birth and death should have no material possessions. The whole point that Kapila makes in this final section of this chapter is that he promises that if you fully surrender to him, he will take you beyond birth and death. This was Krishna's promise at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, the same promise. Savadaman parichaja mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sava papebhyo mokshiyasyami ma sucha. I promise you that I will take you beyond this material energy, but you must surrender to me. Sava daman parichaja. Sava means everything. You must be willing to abandon everything, subtle and gross, in this material world. If you can abandon everything subtle and gross, then Krishna promises he will take you back to Godhead. Or it means that if you, even if you cannot abandon everything subtle and gross, but if you try your most sincere effort, if you fully try, right, sincerely, to the best of your ability, then Krishna will carry what you lack and he'll preserve what you have. One is that you have actually done it, you have attained the state where you've conquered all material desires. The other is that you may only be like 70% perfect.
No, but if you sincerely try, we can only try. The result is not in our hands, isn't it? So there's only one thing. You can only try. But the completion is from somewhere else.
To an extent. It's a two-way reciprocation.
We can do only one thing, isn't it?
Try.
We have to give up and we Prabhupada said.
But as you say, we must give up 100%. Whether we do that 100% is a different question.
That is there, but the point is that pure devotional service means 100% of that. But can we say that we're trying?
That's what I think, that we don't do.
No, but we that we should be. Yeah. That's what Krishna is saying here. If you try your best, then I will cover everything that you lack. As I've mentioned before, Tamal Krishna Maharaj mentioned this story many, many, many times. Prabhupada said, so many lifetimes you serve so many different masters. In this one lifetime you fully give everything to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and whatever you are lacking, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will cover and he'll take you back to God. And I was listening to Tamal Krishna Maharaj speaking this morning, and he was saying that we try. He said sometimes we do not succeed. He said, but we try sincerely. That is the point. And that's the point that Kapila Dev is making here. This is the point that Krishna is making. You must try your best. And if you are sincerely trying to the best of your ability, even if you are lacking something, Krishna will cover that and he'll take you back to Godhead. No? But you must be sincerely trying. In other words, you must be desiring to give up everything in the material world, all subtle and gross connections, all material desires. You must be desiring to give them up. And if you are trying your best, then Krishna will liberate you from this material energy. Prabhupada says this. He says, oh, so is it in this purport? At the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, as far as the devotee is concerned, he is at once transferred to the spiritual world in the association of the Lord. That is the Lord's special mercy. How it is possible is explained in the following verses. Because He is all-powerful, the Lord can do anything and everything. He can excuse all sinful reactions. He can immediately transfer a person to Vaikuntha. That is the inconceivable power of Krishna, who is favorably disposed to the pure devotees. So this is the point which Kapila Devi is giving. Just give everything in devotional service. Give everything to Krishna, and whatever you are lacking, Krishna will, at the end of this body, He will take you back to Godhead. It's an important point, and this is why it is said that we should have faith in Krishna, as opposed to other things. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says you have to be willing to give up all material possessions. Prabhupada makes some other wonderful statements in these purports as well. He says, just trying to find the particular one. In the third paragraph, Prabhupada says, he is not at all attached to improving his social status or improving the status of education of his children. He is not neglectful, he is dutiful, but he does not spend too much time on the upliftment of temporary household or social life. He fully engages in the service of the Lord. And for other affairs, he simply spares as much time as absolutely necessary. That is devotional service. Right? Even as a grihastha, right? We have so many obligations, but we only do as much as necessary. We only get involved as much as necessary, and not beyond that. We don't have a taste for it. We're not interested in going further. Getting more and more involved in the material energy. You're earning more money, right? Having more clothes.
Karunanandi Prabhu sent an email, this is probably about 3-4 weeks ago, where a devotee asked that I'm really finding it difficult to do my devotional service because I have a child. And Prabhupada replied that you'd rather look after your child and forego the deity worship. This is basically what his instructions were. I mean, I don't know along which lines it came across, but this is what Prabhupada's instructions were. So that is contradicting to what you're saying.
Yeah, but the point that I think Prabhupada is making is that it has to be in connection to devotional service, like that. In other words, not as Prabhupada says himself here in this purport, he said the devotee is dutiful. He only goes as far as necessary. In other words, we're not going to get involved in the material energy any more than we need to. That's the point. If you want to become liberated, right? Because you can waste so much time. Devotees can waste so many years on doing activities which are really not necessary or important, just to satisfy someone's mind. Like that. So it's not that we neglect our children, neglect our responsibilities and so forth, but it must be somehow connected to Krishna, to devotional service. Otherwise, what is the point? Is that helps to clarify?
Prabhupada actually says that in a letter to Pujari, I read that letter, was quoted somewhere, and he's writing to Pujari, he's saying that because of so much work, you have like deity worship work and all that, you are getting and that's not spending enough time with your friends and you love the duties of Deepa Pujari. But your first duty is that you spend time with your child because these children are not ordinary children. They have come from, they have been sent from Vaikuntha by Krishna. So you have to look after them first properly. So I think he was talking about balancing, like don't do so much devotional service that you neglect your children and then they don't get attracted to Krishna consciousness at all because you didn't spend time with your children.
And especially because Prabhupada's saying there that it trained them to become Krishna conscious, so that's not a waste of time. It's not that we're just spending time with the children just so we can take them to Disneyland and Luna Park and Wobby's World and all the rest of the places. Not that we don't take them to those places, but it doesn't. It's only as much as necessary. Not that disco moves on and on and on and on and goes further and further, and then your devotional service is becoming less emphasized. The point is, you have to make a balance. Are you making progress in devotional service? That's the point. Because so many devotees, they compromise too much and they stop making progress. So what's the point? Like that, you can have a balanced life. You can have a balanced life, bring up your children, right? Have enough material comfort, as has been explained in the previous chapters. But you must always be progressing in Krishna consciousness. There should be a balance.
That's what comes down to doing our best rather than pure devotional service.
No, no, pure devotional, it's not an excuse not to do pure devotional service.
Yeah. But you know the two points that you gave, I mean, doing pure devotional service or doing our best, and then Krishna will make sort of arrangements for the rest. So is it falling into that category that we're doing our best as grasshoppers?
If we're doing our best, yeah. But then you have to answer that question, are you doing your best? That's the point. So then you're doing your best. But are you doing your best? You have to look within your heart. I know I'm not doing my best.
Okay.
You know.
So we have to set the standard up there and aim.
Well, we shouldn't be complacent in our devotional service. You shouldn't think, oh, well, I'm doing my best, and, you know, Krishna...
Yeah, yeah, of course. I mean,
you know, you can't just kind of, you know... you know, just like, you know, be playing with your yo-yo and, you know, just kind of, you know, walk up to the spiritual world and sort of say, well, I've done my best, you know. Is that okay if I come back now? You know, it's like, I've done my best, really. Yeah, I swear. Have you actually done your best? That's the point. That's what Krishna... Because there's only two people on earth if you're doing your best. Right, one of them is on the altar, right, and the other one is you. You can fool other people, but you can't fool. There's one person you cannot fool, like that. And we try to fool everyone else quite often. Right? We all try to make impressions, like, oh, I'm more advanced than what I think I am, and you know, I'm more advanced than what I know I am. Like that, we like to impress everyone very nicely. There's one person who's not impressed, and there's one person that you can't. Trick like that, and then what's the point? What did you gain? You know, I tricked everyone else, and everyone else thinks, "Oh, I'm so advanced," and everyone, you know, everyone walks around and they see me, they're all prabhu, prabhu, like that.
You're
going to
get caught anyway one day, so
yeah, that could happen, like that. Krishna could expose you, but what's the point of taking all that, you know, false adoration, right? And having so many people adore you and think, "Oh, you're such a nice devotee and such an advanced devotee." Where, you know, if in the heart you're not really deeply, sincerely surrendered and serving Krishna with love, then what's the point? Then what did you gain? Right? You cheated everyone just for some false adoration. Like that. So we have to look in our heart. Are we really doing our best? That's the point.
From one way, it looks like, you know, Krishna is saying that do it for me. But if we see carefully, we try to see that the outcome of the battle is that Arjuna becomes, you know, prosperous, or I can say he becomes the victorious person, and he then enjoys the kingdom on earth as well. So Krishna is looking for his devotees' benefit, although he's saying in words that do it for me, but actually the outcome of the battle becomes that the devotee becomes happy. So would you like to comment anything on this one?
It's a Bhagavad Gita question.
Sorry?
You have to go to Bhakti Shastri for this question.
No.
This is a Bhakti Shastri question. This is Bhakti Vaibhav.
The point is...
I understand the point.
Yeah, the devotional service...
I understand the point.
We should not focus on other things, just give more importance to devotional service. But Krishna is giving benefits or comforts to the
devotee. Do you go to the Bhakti Shastri course? You don't?
Sometimes.
Sometimes? Then ask the question in that class. Because this is a Bhagavad Gita question, specifically, like this. Okay.
Sorry, can I ask a question? When you said that gross and subtle connections, what do we mean by subtle connections? We have to get detached from both gross and subtle connections.
Subtle means things, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says profit, distinction, and adoration.
Okay.
He says the Shikshastika, na danam, na janam, na sundarim. So this is subtle attachments. Right? We have the gross attachment, but then the subtle attachment. Right? Kapiladeva has already said that the main attachment to everyone in the material world is sex life. So gross sex life, we may give that up. But subtle sex life means to enjoy with the opposite sex. Najanam, nadanam, nasundarim kavitam. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains sundarim kavitam means the poetic words of the opposite sex. This is the thing that we're most attached to in this material world. That when the opposite sex gives us adoration or gives us some praise, then we become very bound, right? And the hridaya grantim, the knot within the heart becomes very tight. Like that, we can become very easily controlled by the opposite sex. That is called subtle attachment or subtle sex life, and that is even more harder to give up than gross attachment. You see in the pastime of the Gundicha
Marjana.
Mahaprabhu goes in and he cleanses the temple the first time, and then he goes in the second time and he cleanses it even more subtly, the more finer dust. And Prabhupada explains that this is all of the subtle attachments, like profit, distinction, and adoration. All those things must be gone from the heart before Krishna will come and sit on the heart. Just like in the Gundicha temple, right? Jagannath will only come and sit in that temple when everything is cleaned. So Mahaprabhu was cleaning because he's showing us allegorically that we must cleanse the heart before Krishna will come and sit there. So that's Prabhupada's purpose. The terrible fear of birth and death can never be forsaken by anyone who resorts to any shelter other than myself. For I am the Almighty Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original source of all creation, and also the Supreme Soul of all souls. So, one cannot pass beyond birth and death unless he is favoured by Krishna. Prabhupada says in the purport that one must receive Krishna's favour. This is how we become able to conquer birth and death. Otherwise, it's not possible. Krishna is known as Mukunda. Mukunda means the one who gives liberation. So, if you want to become liberated from birth and death, then you must receive Krishna's favour. Now, how do we receive his favour? We must act in such a way that Krishna will recognize us. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, do not try to see Krishna, but act in such a way that Krishna will want to see you. That is called devotional service or bhakti. So when our devotion or our service becomes sufficient and becomes of a high enough quality or grade, then Krishna will be attracted to see us. Otherwise, Krishna is not attracted to see us at this point in time. Krishna is not drawn by our devotional service. And this is the process of bhakti, which is taught within the Srimad Bhagavatam. We read in the beginning of the second canto, in the first chapter, in the 11th verse. What is the verse? Harinam Anugyutanam. This is the process which is taught in the Bhagavatam. Harinam Anugyutanam. You must learn to chant Harinam. Harinam Kirtan. But it must become Anugyutanam. It means that you must learn to chant following in the mood of the previous acharyas. Following in the mood of your spiritual master. This is how you must learn to chant. That is the process of the Bhagavatam. Now, what is the way that you must chant? Prabhupada explains in the purport, in the teachings of Queen Kunti, that one must learn to chant with feeling. That will attract Krishna. Just like I was listening to Tamal Krishnamurti's in the last week he was giving some lectures, and he was saying that he just arrived in Fiji, to Lotoka, and he said that when I arrived at the airport and he was going through the immigration, then the immigration official looked at his passport and he said, "Are you such and such?" So he chanted his name. But he said there was no feeling in the name. So I didn't feel anything. No attraction, no attachment to the person. Even though the person said his name, but there's nothing moved in the heart. But then as soon as he came out of the airport, right, and there was a big kirtan, right, and everyone was chanting Jai Gurudev, Jai Gurudev, he said the sound of the devotees chanting the name with love and affection and attachment to the spiritual master, that captures the spiritual master's heart. The devotion captures Krishna's heart. This is the process. This is the entire sum and substance of the process of the teachings of the Srimad Bhagavatam, how to approach Krishna. There must be feeling within the heart. The devotion must be done with attachment, with rati, with ruchi, with attachment. And then Krishna becomes attracted. Otherwise Krishna has no need to be attracted. We can chant our name mechanically. We can chant the holy names of Krishna mechanically. Bahu jamma kariyari shrava nikiratana. You can chant for birds if you like. Bahu jamma. Go on chanting for lifetimes. You know, if you just want to chant your sniggity ram rounds on your clicker, you know, then you can chant like that for lifetimes, no problem. But Krishna will not come. Alright? But if you want Krishna to come, there must be a quality in the chanting. Prabhupada explains this in the teachings of Queen Kunti in the first canto. There must be a quality in the chanting. A quality in the way that you chant the name of Krishna that will attract Krishna to come. This is the process. This is the Harinam Anukirtanam process of how to approach Krishna. And this is how we can conquer birth and death. Only Krishna, only when he favors us, can we conquer birth and death. Krishna becomes favored when we approach him with the right sentiment, with the right mentality. That is how Draupadi was able to attract Krishna. And that's why Prabhupada says within the Nectar of Devotion, one must chant in the same way that a child calls out for the mother. That is the way we must chant our japa, actually. That's how we chant the holy name of Krishna, like a child calling out. I know my chanting is not of that quality, and therefore Krishna is not coming very close. But that is the way we need to learn to chant. That is Harinam Anukirtana. That is following the mood of the six Goswamis. He Radhe Brajite Chalalite He Nanda Suno Kuta. Where are you? That is how Mahaprabhu was chanting. When Mahaprabhu's guru, Ishvara Puri, gave him initiation at Gaya, and then after staying up all night chanting the holy name, Mahaprabhu came to Ishvara Puri the next morning and he said, "What sort of a mantra have you given me? I've become like a madman. I cannot stop chanting. My tongue cannot stop chanting this holy name of Krishna." That is the quality of chanting which we must learn. That is the message of the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually.
Did Lord Chaitanya really ask this of spiritual master?
What's
like
it?
This? Did Lord Chaitanya ask his spiritual master like this?
Yeah.
What sort of mantra have you given him?
That's what he said.
Yeah?
If you read Chaitanya Bhagavatam, then you'll see.
Okay.
I think Chaitanya Charitamrita it also says.
Okay.
Same verses.
So if we don't experience those feelings, like, you know, you're saying we should chant to experience, so should we take it till we meet it, or?
No, that won't work. But you must not imitate, but you must follow. Or as Rupa Goswami says, that devotional service must be performed utsahan nishchaya daya, which means there must be an enthusiasm to follow in the mood of the guru, of the previous devotees. but you cannot imitate it. Imitation will not work like that. But there must be a genuine, sincere desire to follow and to aspire to become like that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. And also, on the other hand, don't we say, when you say the name Krishna, he's already there, right? Whether, I mean, that's what we go for, talk about Agyata Sukriti. People say, oh, sign a Rama, they read, or because they said the name of Rama, they have done some spiritual advancement or something. So, if a person is chanting mechanically, I'm sure there should be some advancement, or like.
No, the advancement is there. Something is there. But you really begin to make advancement when you begin to chant Nama Bas. Nama Bas means attentive chanting, when you begin to chant attentively. Just like today, I was coming in the car, for some reason today I'm feeling tired. Just like I saw Jagannath run before, I was walking down the stairs, and I was yawning. You know, and I was thinking, I felt very embarrassed because I was just so, like, tired, you know. Like that. Actually, I know why I'm tired. Because last night, the feast, we had the Nisringa Chaturdasi, feast of the farm. And Tarini Rupa, there was about eight of us, we took the feast. It was very nice. We had a nice program, did nice abhishek. And then Tarini Rupa, she said, does anyone want any more? And I said, yes, can I please have a little more subji? And then she put the spoon in the bucket, and she gave me all these huge pieces of curd. Just on my plate. And as soon as I looked at it, I thought, oh, finished. That's it. Like that. So all today I've just been feeling like, you know. And I was chanting in the car on the way out, coming on the way to Melbourne. And my chanting, like, because I had the sun visor on the side, so the sun wouldn't kill my face, and I kept going. Like, kept in the sun visor. I thought, oh, I'm nodding off. Normally I don't nod off when I'm like chanting my rounds, but I just kept trying to chant like that. So that kind of chanting is not going to you're not going to advance very quickly with that kind of chanting. Chanting must be done attentively. That is Nama Bas. And from that chanting, then you begin to make progress like that.
We say that the detachment from material energy and the love for God, the pure devotion service is the essential to go back. So we see few people do that, and we see few others don't do that, right? And there is no difference in the both the personalities, because both are the souls and the parts and parcel of the Lord. So what is the root cause that one person can surrender fully and other person, even though put in the sincere endeavor, they can't surrender? So what is the root cause?
Then you have to study in the part of the chapter where Kapila talked about what binds us to this material world. Lust, greed, false ego, material attachment, aham mameti. He explains all of these things. So you have to analyze that. One person has realized that more than the other person. But by studying these teachings and meditating on them, then you can begin to develop a spirit of detachment.
Which chapter is that?
This chapter.
When Krishnananda Prabhu was here in one of our discussions, he was telling me that he has increased his chanting now. He's doing 25 rounds daily, and this year he is going to go to 32 rounds daily. So he told me that mechanical chanting will do some anartha nivritti, but he said that when one increases the quantity of chanting, then the quality of chanting also goes up automatically. That was his realization. And he said that one will then come to the ruchi platform. Till that time, ruchi will not manifest. Anartha nivritti may be happening slowly by mechanical chanting, because chanting has some potency in it to clean, but taste will not develop. So that's one instruction he gave this time.
Who gave Prabhuji?
One of my senior godbrothers had come.
Okay.
So I am actually going through the book called The Art of Chanting Hare Krishna, which is written by Zulinas Mahanidhi Swami. He analyzes the whole process of chanting into the method, mood, and mellows. What he is telling is that the neophytes are not expected to basically just develop the mood. Even if they try very hard,
it is actually beyond their capacity to really enter the mood in a manner. Like how basically the Goswami is a chanting, so says, burn your pipes. The instruction is to follow the ladder. So the ladder is to rise early, sit properly, and chant at basically you know, the regulated time. Chant loudly, hear, and in a particular way, you know, just meditate on the form of the Lord. That's all basically, you know, the neophyte can do. Once he follows the instructions, his anartha nivritti process will be really expedited, and he will be able to understand what the different moods of basically the chanters are. So we were following what is the mood of Rupa Goswami. We have to have some perception and understanding and realization of that mood. That will come only if you are following the method. And once you enter the mood, then you know the mellows will come. So he says that normally for neophytes, the instruction is to follow the method, then the madhyamas will come to the platform of the mood, and the uttamas have got basically the mellows. So it's a wonderful way he actually describes the whole process.
Powerful.
Doesn't the mellow come out by the mercy of the Lord?
By following the instructions of Acharya, Sarinama Anukirtana, that's the process.
But by the mercy of the Lord.
Yeah, if you actually follow the instructions of Acharya, then you know the mercy will follow.
Then by His mercy, Lord will be restrained His mercy, Lord.
Yeah, you have to invoke His mercy, that's the point. Yeah, Mahanidhi Swami gives classes at Radhakund every day in Kartik. Last Kartik, I think he was giving 3 classes a day. Each class was 1.5 hours. So he's speaking for 4.5 hours every day. But that's, if you're in that part of Braj, then you can go and listen to them.
So he's based in Sri Radhakund every time?
Yeah, he lives there. Ironically, he has an ashram there, nice ashram. And in Kartik, he gives classes every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, 3 classes a day. So.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. He had told me also when I asked him that, and I don't have the desire also to do this candy chanting. The desire has to come first for candy chanting, then candy chanting will come. So he told me that the remedy is to hear one Guru Maharaj's lecture every day. Everyone should listen to at least one lecture by one's own spiritual master every day. Only then that mood will come. Otherwise, it will just not come.
Mood of?
Mood, the desire to chant attentively will not come if one does not hear one's spiritual master's lectures every day.
Mm.
Even if there is a gap, it will not come. To keep on hearing every day.
Mm.
So the regulated process which we are talking about here. So.
Mm.
Hearing, regulated hearing.
Mm.
That's what he said.
But that comes to the mercy again. The mercy of the spiritual master.
Yeah. No, it comes from putting the cassette tape into the tape recorder.
Yeah, but by hearing the spiritual master.
Yeah, it comes from pressing the play button. It is because of my supremacy that the wind blows. Out of fear of me, the sun shines. Out of fear of me. And the Lord of the clouds, Indra, sends forth showers out of fear of me. Fire burns out of fear of me, and death goes about taking its toll out of fear of me. So, the point that Kapila is making to Devahuti is that I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when one surrenders to Krishna, one has no obligation to any other personality. When you surrender to Krishna, there is no obligation to Indra, there is no obligation to Brahma, there is no obligation to any other personality, save and except Krishna. Our only obligation in life is to please Krishna. And everything else we do in life must be measured according to this point. Is this also pleasing Krishna? We may do some other thing or do some other activity, but is this also pleasing Krishna? As we said before, one must look after one's children, and Prabhupada gave that instruction that one can reduce one's deity worship in order to look after one's children properly. So we follow that instruction. Why? Because it gives pleasure to Krishna. That is our obligation, to please Krishna. And if Krishna says that I want you to even reduce your service to me, so that you can look after your children and bring them up in Krishna consciousness, yeah, then by following that, you are serving Krishna. So this is fulfilling your obligation to Krishna, and this is the point which Kapila is pointing out. This is our foremost obligation in life.
What about the signification of word fear here? Actually, they are doing their service. And are they trying to establish the supremacy of the Lord? Or
yeah, like that.
Otherwise, like some Vayu, it says service, and my understanding it's out of love and affection towards Lord, not by fear.
It depends on the level of the devotee. When we're practicing Bhakti Bhakti, then there's a certain amount of fear in our practice. Just like, you know, if we don't finish our 16 rounds, there's a fear that we have disobeyed the guru.
But that's love. That's love.
It may not be completely based on love yet. Vaidhi, within our vaidhi, there's a certain amount of fear. That's why it's called vaidhi. Vaidhi means regular. I know myself, I wouldn't spontaneously chant 16 rounds every day. Just out of spontaneity or just out of love. There has to be some degree of vaidhi or regulation which is based on a certain amount of fear. And by following that regulation, that brings us to the platform of spontaneity. But it's not all based on spontaneity or love in the beginning. I know for myself, if there wasn't a rule or a vow taken that we have to chant 16 rounds, that I wouldn't do it every day. Just out of love or just out of spontaneity, because we're not on that level yet.
That reminds me of the quotation from Ramayana. When Ram was requesting sea so that make way for me so that I can go to Lanka, but sea was not cooperating. Then he took out his arrow and he was about to shoot that arrow. Then Tulsidas says that, Bhai Binu Vaina Priti. Without fear, there is no question of love.
No, that's a lower level. That's a lower level. The residents of Vrindavan, their devotion is not based on fear. It is based on rag, or based on spontaneous attraction to Krishna. Like that. But for someone who's in a lesser position, who has awe and reverence towards the Lord, it is based on a certain amount of fear. Even our devotion is based on a certain amount of fear. The yogis, equipped with transcendental knowledge and renunciation and engaged in devotional service for their eternal benefit, take shelter of my lotus feet. And since I am the Lord, they are thus eligible to enter into the kingdom of Godhead without fear. So the topmost devotee, or the topmost transcendentalist, is the bhakta. Is the devotee. Krishna says, of all devotees, of all transcendentals, the topmost is the one who always thinks of me. At the end of the sixth chapter of the Gita, that is his final instruction. Yogi Mama Pi Salvation. Of all yogis, of all transcendentals, the topmost is the devotee. Therefore, persons whose minds are fixed on the Lord engage in the intensive practice of devotional service. That is the only means for attainment of the final perfection of life. One should, as Prabhupada points out, that one should fix his mind on Krishna. One should fix his mind upon Krishna, and then by fixing his mind on Krishna, then automatically the senses will also become fixed upon Krishna. No? So this is the process of bhakti. No? One must learn to fix one's mind upon Krishna. That is Krishna's instruction in the Gita. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. Fix your mind upon me. So this is the goal of devotional service, for the mind to be fixed on Krishna. Always remember Krishna and never forget him. So Kapila's teachings, the teachings of devotional service, are to bring us to this point where we always think of Krishna. If the mind is on Krishna, automatically the senses will engage in Krishna's service. And this is called bhakti or devotion. So next week we'll begin chapter 26, which is fundamental principles of material nature. So this is where devotion, this is where Kapila's teachings will begin to become very analytical. And Kapila will begin to teach us about Sankhya philosophy. So we'll continue next week. Now, Nirut Mataji would like to get the blessings of all the Vaishnavas by offering, we're to offer the first grains to?
Yes. Okay. To my son.
To your son?
Yes.
Okay. So if all the devotees can just stay for a few minutes, and we'll offer first grains to their son. And this way, if all the Vaishnavas can please give their blessings on this.